afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, April 7th, 2008. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale. From now until April 15th, Essential Wholesale is offering $10.40 off of every order over $100. Check out the details and place your order today at EssentialWholesale.com. Did you know that Thomas Edison did not actually invent the light bulb? I didn't know that until Blaine McCormick, Associate Dean for Undergraduate Programs at Baylor University's Hancomer School of Business, told me so last week. According to Associate Dean McCormick, patent records show that Edison was not the first to apply for a patent on a working light bulb, which begs the question, how on earth did he take the credit for it? Well, you can read the entire answer in my interview with Dean McCormick at the April 2nd post at IndieBusinessBlog.com. But for now, suffice to say that Edison was a marketing genius, and he exercised his marketing muscle in large part by partnering with the media to get the word out about his invention. Today, we'll be talking with author and PR expert Susan Harrow about how indie business owners can develop media relationships that will put our businesses in the most favorable possible light. But first, let me introduce my indie guest co-host today. Her name is Penny Talent, and she's the owner of Sugarlicious in Holbrook, Massachusetts. And up there, Penny makes delicious, guess what, sugar scrubs from a variety of natural ingredients. They come in a lot of different colors and different sizes, and I'm sure you'll want to take a look at what Penny's Sugarlicious Sugar Scrubs have to offer at her website, which is sugarlicious.com. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Penny.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, Penny, tell me a little bit about how you discovered Indie. I heard from you a while back, but I've never really heard the whole story from you. How did you find me? And I'm so excited that you did. Tell us how that happened.
Well, I've been around the world of online soap making lists for years and years now. I started by making handmade soap about 10 years ago. And somewhere along the line, I think originally your business was Handmade Beauty Network?
Yes, it was, a while ago.
Mm-hmm. So I had first heard your business then. And, you know, it was one of those things where every time I thought, well, maybe I'll join, you know, a different organization, and I'd go, well, you know, I can do it okay on my own.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, as time has gone on, I've realized that, you know, it's just too difficult to do things by yourself, and I saw how much information that you had available, and I decided to join.
It is good to have some partners, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Now, so, Penny, tell me a little bit about how you decided on beauty products as the market that you would launch a business in. I'm sure you can maybe considered other options. How did you choose this one?
I've always attempted to have a business of my own from, you know, the time that I was, you know, a teenager and doing little arts and crafts things. And the one thing that I always ended up gravitating back towards were, you know, stuff to do with beauty products. Somewhere along the line, I actually had gone to school to get a manicuring license, so that beauty products were in my blood somewhere.
Okay.
Of course, the handmade soap thing came along, and like most people, I started out making it for myself, but as everyone finds out, ultimately you end up with tons and tons and tons of soap, and everybody else wants to buy it from you.
Right. You can only take so many baths, right?
Exactly. It just seemed to be a natural progression. You know,
so it started as a hobby for you, and then as time developed, you decided that you could make a living at it, make some money at it.
Yeah. Like I said, about 10 years ago, there really weren't too many other handmade soap makers out there. So at the time when I did hit the circuits and you know, did shows and traveled around to different fairs, I was pretty much the only one. And so, of course, people were amazed. Oh, my gosh, you made handmade soap yourself. That's so amazing.
Right.
But as time has gone on, it's very popular, and there's a lot of people out there.
And now you're focusing on sugar scrubs and not soap. How did that transformation take place?
Well, somewhere along the line, doing the shows required being away from home. And at the time, I had one daughter who was about 7 years old, so it was easier to get away from home. But with the addition of two more small children, it kind of put a kink in my, you know, traveling days. So I stopped making soap and stopped doing shows. But I always kind of kept my hand in dabbling, you know, different things. And I knew that eventually I wanted to get back into business. And now that my youngest is 6, I figured, well, now's a good time. And I really don't have the space to make handmade soap anymore. But I kept thinking, well, there's so many people out there doing the exact same things that, you know, I really need to do something that's different.
Try to get a little more specialized and more of a niche.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it looks like your sugar scrubs nicely partner with your expertise as a registered nail technician.
Yes. What I ultimately, after actually, it took taking your handmade beauty course.
The Handmade Beauty University?
Yeah, that's okay. The one. To kind of drive home the point that, you know, I really can't be everything to everybody. And some of the stories that were in one of the classes really just drove home the point that, you know, the more specialized you are, the easier it is to, as you said, find a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately I decided to focus on sugar scrubs, and not only just sugar scrubs like most people think body scrubs, but more specifically for your hands, like manicure scrubs.
Right. Well, that certainly does narrow things down a lot. So it sounds like you went all the way from, like, a big bath and body picture, and over the course of what it sounds like many years, you've narrowed things down, not just because of space reasons, but also because you realized you had to have more of a focus for your business.
Yeah. It was one of those things that every time you did a show and somebody would come up to you and go, oh, do you happen to sell bath bombs? And I think, oh, darn, no, but maybe I should, you know. And then I'd go home and I'd work on making bath bombs, and it just, you know, the next time you'd go to a show and somebody would say, oh, well, do you sell bath salt? And I'd go, no, but I have bath bombs. And they'd go, oh, well, you know, I really would rather have bath salt. It'd be like, darn, you know, missed a chance on the sales. Let me go home and make some of that. And pretty soon, you know.
And before you know it, you have different containers in different sizes and coloring agents, different raw materials, different labels, and it's just
you've got
overwhelming.
A million and one different things, and it always seems like somebody wants more.
Yeah.
Or somebody wants something else that you don't have.
Right, yeah. And that's always the case in business, of course, and that's okay, right?
Yeah, exactly. Except when I finally get down to it, it was like, you know, I really can't, I can't be everything to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than going out there and pleasing everyone who comes up to my table, I just have to realize that not everyone's going to be attracted to the product that I make, and that's okay. But I really need to stay focused on doing one particular thing.
Because now, Penny, have you noticed since you narrowed things down so significantly that when you do talk with people about what you do, it's far easier to convey your marketing messages and information about your business than it was when you were doing so many things and trying to rope everything in?
Oh, definitely. In the beginning, if you had asked me what I did, and I would say, well, oh, I make handmade beauty products, and people would go, oh, wow. You know, but really, that doesn't differentiate you from so many other people who make handmade beauty products.
That's right, large and small.
Exactly. Now when somebody comes up to me and says, well, okay, so you have sugar scrubs. Well, you know, what exactly do you do? Is it just, you know, a body scrub? And then I can really focus in and explain to them that I do sugar scrubs. I focus on hand care specifically. I am a an ex-nail biter, unfortunately, or fortunately, I should say now. So really, I have kind of the background to help other people whose hands maybe aren't looking as nice as they want them to be.
And Penny, when you tell people that you are a professional nail technician and you help people take care of their hands and your products do that, do you find that that just elevates your credibility as a business owner as well as the credibility of your product in the minds of the people you're talking to?
I think it does. For the most part, actually, I would have thought in the beginning that people finding out that I was also a nurse, that would kind of made more of an impact. But in the end, it turned out that having gone to manicuring school was the bigger thing. People were more like, wow, you know, now that's somebody who really should understand taking care of hands specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And she must know something perhaps that maybe, you know, somebody else on the street doesn't. So that kind of put a little bit more emphasis on the hand care products, which ultimately was the thing that led me to think that, well, you know, maybe I should take the focus of sugar scrubs and narrow it even further and focus mainly on hand care.
So you recently launched the Sugarlicious blog. How's that going?
Actually, it's going pretty well. At first I thought, well, I'm not sure if I have a lot to say, or I'm not sure if anything that I have to say is of interest to anyone. But I'm amazed all the time when I look at the stats and I'm like, wow, oh my gosh.
And by stats you mean people are visiting your blog.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and that's so exciting. As you know, and many of my listeners know too, we covered blogging in last month's group coaching, and it just really helped a lot of people get their blogs going. And you just started this blog a couple of weeks ago, and it's already really, really focused, very nicely done. And for those of you who'd like to visit it, there's a link from Penny's website at sugarliciousscrubs.com to her blog at sugarliciousscrubs.blogspot.com. And you've got some nice pictures there and some great information to help people take care of their hands using paraffin treatments and other types of things they can learn about to prevent nail fungal infection. And that's really great. Penny, I congratulate you on narrowing down your niche. And, of course, this month in group coaching we're covering the riches are in the niches. So everyone feel free to join in and email me or give me a call or visit indiebeauty.com and click on group coaching, and you can learn more about how you can join in on Thursday night at 10 o'clock p.m. for our Niches Are in the Riches group coaching. Well, Penny, we're going to take our first break.
Sure.
And when we come back, we are going to be joined by Susan Harrow. She's a PR expert and the author of Selling Yourself Without Selling Your Soul, A Woman's Guide to Promoting Herself, Her Business, Her Product, or Her Cause with Integrity and Spirit. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Hey, to Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we are here with my guest indie co-host, Penny Talent of Sugarlicious Scrubs in Holbrook, Massachusetts. And I'm excited that we are now joined by our special guest of the day. She's Susan Harrow, the author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul, A Woman's Guide to Promoting Herself, Her Business, Her Product, or Her Cause with Integrity and Spirit. Susan is a top media coach and marketing expert who has helped thousands of people, including me, get national media attention. She is a wonderful speaker offering keynotes, workshops, trainings, and consultations to corporations, associations, and individuals. Susan, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be talking to your audience, particularly because so many of them are women.
Yes, well, we've got a lot of women listeners, and your book, Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul, is directed specifically to women. Susan, tell us why it is that you felt that a book like this needed to be specifically aimed at women.
What I found was women didn't want to brag, beg, or whore themselves to get good publicity. And women don't like to toot their own horn. And what I found was that women thought that they couldn't get what they want and still promote themselves. And that's just not true. And I found that also men loved this book and, you know, complained that it was just for women because some men have these issues too. But mostly women are a little bit shy about getting out there and really expressing themselves, where men are not. So that's not a man's issue. And one of the big issues that is specifically for women is that women want to be liked. Men want to be respected. And I think we as women have to let go a little bit of that needing to be liked, the disease to please, as Oprah calls it, and be more forthright about our gifts. And one way that we can do that, Donna Maria, is even when any woman gives us or anybody gives us a compliment, instead of just shoving it off, to actually take a moment, absorb it, say thank you, and let that sink in. And even just accepting a compliment is one way to begin to be able to put yourself more prominently out in the world.
If you have a question for Susan about tooting your own horn, so to speak, maybe you're a little bit shy, you can call us, 800-773-0355. You can also email your question to me at info@indiebusinessradio.com. Well, Susan, before you joined in, I was talking with Penny at Sugarlicious Scrubs about something that you just mentioned. She told us that when she first started her business, someone would come up to her and they would ask her, did she sell something in particular that she didn't sell? And she would say, well, of course, no, I don't sell that. And then she would run home and then she would start making it and adding it to her repertoire. Is that an example of what you described as sort of the disease to please?
Yeah, well, also, you know, but that's also a great market lesson, is that sometimes we think we know what our clients want, but we need to ask and actually find out. And that's what happened with me, is that a lot of women were calling and saying, I really want to promote myself, but I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be shamed by the media. I don't want to feel like a whore. I really want to be able to keep my self-respect and, you know, not bare my breasts or my secrets on any kind of national show. So I think that is one thing that women, not only do they want to keep their private lives private, but they also really want to be able to, and there's a positive side to pleasing, and that is, I mean, I think that you can take that, like she did, in terms of market research. If this is something that really women really want, the positive side of that is go make it and sell it.
Well, you know, I do talk with a lot of women who said what Penny said, Susan, and you know, there really does seem to be this, as you said, this desire to give people what they want so that they will be liked and that they will have a positive, have a positive experience while dealing with that person. When in business, it just may not be the best thing for your business to do that.
Well, I think there's an evaluation process that needs to take place. Am I doing this to please other people, or am I doing this because this is a good marketing decision?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they can go hand in hand, but one is not subservient to the other. And that's the question. I mean, I was reading this book called Hats and Eyeglasses. It's a woman's love affair with poker. And I was really surprised that she caught herself at the poker table saying that, you know, all my life I've been programmed to please men around me to make them feel comfortable and not threatened. And she said, you know, at the poker table, she would even, you know, shrug off losing a dollar or two, not push to win because she wanted to be liked. This is Martha Frankel. Now, she does celebrity interviews all over the world. You know, she's not intimidated by anything. And yet she found herself doing this. And then she said, you know, what she decided to do is to not let the men win. And what happened? And she said, what happened is that they didn't like me less. They actually liked me more. And at the poker table, when she would beat them, she would say, I'm sorry. And she said, apparently there are no sorries in poker. But and that's another thing that we women do is we apologize, but we shouldn't.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's about really just getting used to that, being able to, quote-unquote, win with dignity and aplomb without feeling like we're dissing somebody else. Does that make sense?
Of course it does. It points out the fact that you've got to get out there. If you're going to, you know, try it, you got to get out there and try it. And you're the perfect person to help somebody sort of get on their media feet. Tell us a little bit, Susan, about how you got into this industry. What's a little bit of your entrepreneurial story?
Well, one of the things that happened is when I was a publicist, I found that when my clients got, I got them great placements in, you know, on television, on national TV shows, in the New York Times, in the Wall Street Journal. And what I found was that they didn't have the kind of results that they expected. When I started listening to those interviews and reading those interviews, I knew why. And particularly with women, didn't know how to explain themselves in a succinct and captivating manner. Because we as women, often we have kind of, what do they call it, train of consciousness, thinking, you know, we don't think linearly. And so really what I'm training a lot of women on is how to think a little bit more linearly and to the point. So once I began to train my clients on getting to the point and telling the best things about their products, telling stories, anecdotes, what I found was that then their results skyrocketed. And that's why I became more of a media trainer and strategist than a publicist, which is someone who gets the placements. And one of the things that I trained women on in particular is how to connect their past stories with their present business. And one of my clients, Kristen Scherlein, she left a multi-million dollar business as a graphic designer and it became what she calls a blanket lady. She creates these cozy blankets with affirmations written on them so you wrap yourself up in your intentions. And during one of these media coaching sessions, what we found was that she didn't know that she had the story connection in the past that brought her to what she did today. She said, I didn't really want to become an entrepreneur, but it's in my blood. And one of the stories that came out was my grandfather was a shoemaker, and in the Depression he saw that many people couldn't afford shoes. So he traded chickens for shoes to make sure that none of the children in the village went shoeless. And she said, I didn't realize that I was following in his footsteps when I began my business, which will become a complete nonprofit in 5 years, but I am. We give away blankets to churches, charities, and the homeless. And in essence, what she said is, I'm trading chickens for shoes. That story is a story that she can connect and tell her audience that makes it compelling to know more about her business. You see, it's not really about the blankets. Mm-hmm. It's about her and her business. And oftentimes, I think that women, particularly your audience who are selling products, they think it's all about the product, but it's not. It's all about the story, the angle, the issue, what's happening in the culture today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because I love the way you put that. It's not about the products. And, of course, that doesn't mean you can sell lousy products. It has to be, to some extent, some good products. But, Susan, how do you help people develop these kinds of stories that are so necessary to sell their products, but which people seem to have so much trouble with?
They come out naturally in a conversation when we start to talk about what somebody wants. First is to establish your deepest intention. And women have an easy time with this part because it's how do you want to serve in the world?
Right.
Not what can the world give you, but what you can give the world. We women have a very easy time. But then we also have to look at the opposite end, which is what do you want back? What do you want your audience to do? What action do you want them to take?
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you say, okay, well, what kind of things can I say to motivate my audience to take those actions? What's going on in the culture today that I can connect with that's going to be fascinating? So, for example, when I went up on Penny's site, that Sugarlicious, I said, oh, I can see a great angle here if she hasn't used it already, and that is to get in all of the food magazines because you've got these a make a scrub sundae, and you've got ingredients that are food. And so one of the things that's happening in the makeup industry, but in a lot of other industries, is that food ingredients are being used to keep us healthy. So there's an angle here not just to go into beauty magazines, but to go into gourmet magazines, to go into natural, you know, products magazines, because you've got these delicious, you know, looking as well as, you know, sound delicious sounding. I mean, I didn't, and I learned something brand new, too, by the way. I'm using a salt scrub. I didn't know I should be using a sugar scrub, you know? So that's a fascinating, you know, angle, too. Why is sugar good for you? Because there's so much in the culture right now about why sugar is bad for you. But mm-hmm. if you rub it on your skin, it's good for you, right? You just don't, not as long, but you're just not eating those sundaes.
Yeah, don't eat it.
Don't eat it.
Body.
Yeah.
Susan, that's such an interesting point, and not a hard one for people to follow. Just you know, go to the bookstore and look at all the magazines there and try and make some connections. And while you were talking, something occurred to me. I recently met a woman who's a hand model. Her hands are
yeah.
in ads and things, and I thought, well, if they have a trade magazine, this is the perfect place to be featured.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the women I interviewed for Get Into O Magazine, Oprah's magazine, at Bella PR, one of the ways that she got her clients in there is that she pitched several angles. One was the entrepreneur angle, a story about how they're called Miss Jessie's products, and they do have food in them like yours, Penny. They sound very delicious, curly pudding, curly meringue, curly buttercream, it's for your hair, Miss Jessie's products, and that was her grandmother. And so she pitched the entrepreneurial angle about how they're keeping the family name alive through the memory of their grandmother, Miss Jessie, and importance of tradition. So it was about being creative. It's not just about here's a product. It's about a special family history with surprising ingredients about the product. And, of course, the women themselves are packaged beautifully, too, because to get in something like O Magazine and in other beauty magazines, your product, not only does your product have to be beautiful, but you do too. And what I mean by that is you have to be packaged beautifully. Packaging and beauty go hand in hand. So then she pitched also a trendy food angle, because what I was just talking about, there are products with food ingredients were creating a buzz. So she created a food angle to that. And so she had, it wasn't just about the product then, you see. It was about the girls who started it, about the tradition of the family, and then about the trend of food. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. People can relate to it on so many different angles. And another point that you made that I want to highlight and ask you about is you said that the same company was pitched to the same magazine using sort of a different strategy each time.
That's right. That's right. Because particularly in O Magazine, I mean, of course, a lot of your listeners want to get their products in O Magazine, and when I was doing the research for that, most of the research was done about getting into Oprah's favorite things. But all of the same principles apply to all magazines. You've got to have a great shot of your product. You've got to have a really fascinating angle that can be conveyed easily. And, you know, your products need to work. They need to be luscious. They need to be delicious. But packaging from the inside out and the outside in is very, very important, particularly in your industry, where it's all about perception and beauty and sensuality and smells. All of those things need to be conveyed in a story, particularly when you're talking about your products, where you want to give the feeling of the product, because people don't buy products, they buy experiences.
Good point. We're talking with Susan Harrow, owner of PRSecrets.com, and the author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul. If you have a question that you'd like to ask her while we've got her all to ourselves here this afternoon on Indie Business Radio, feel free to call us, 800-773-0355. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to The Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of GlobalTalkRadio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Business Radio. We're talking with Susan Harrow, author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul. And my guest indie co-host today, Penny Talent of Sugarlicious, has a question about this fascinating information that Susan is sharing with us about creating a story around your products. Penny, what's your question?
Hi, Susan. In my other work life, I'm also a nurse. And as a nurse, I'm more in tune with looking at things. Kind of in everything has a sensible order. When you're writing a nurse's note, you basically start at the top of the person's head and describe, you know, all their, you know, from the head down to their feet, you know, what may be going on. When you were describing using emotions to tie a story into your product, I know when I go to do things, I bring that kind of nursing background with me, and I maybe don't get some of the emotions across. I'm kind of curious as to how much of an emotional story should you bring with the product? I'm not even exactly sure how I should describe.
The more emotion, the better, because what people remember is the feeling, not the word. They remember the feeling behind the word. So if you can make people feel something, that's what they recall, and your industry is all about feeling beautiful. It's not about how many times we slough off the top layer of our skin. It's about what gives us that inner glow, what gives us that outer glow. So it's any kind of story that's going to show a dramatic, you know, something that happened that has dramatic visible results. You know, somebody in your industry who maybe has a really bad psoriasis or a skin disorder and they felt shy to go outside, and after using your products, they felt confident and loved life again. Those are the kinds of things that we're looking for. In fact, in particular, on television, what the producers look for is that really strong emotional core. And the Oprah producers have said if they can make their audiences cry, it's been a successful show. So that's true in any industry. Not that you have to make people cry, but it can be cries of joy as well as cries of, you know, the kind of emotion. When you might make somebody cry, you pull them out of it and you make them happy. And, you know, your story on the site, even of how you discover these products, is a fascinating one, that your hands got dry from using all of these antibacterial scrubs and things that dried out your hands, and then other people began to notice. So your product line started very organically from an intrinsic need in your industry. But I'm sure that you have stories about people who, you know, even couldn't use their hands because they were so cracked and dry and hurt with arthritis and, you know, the paraffin, you know, wax or one of the scrubs helped them knit again. You know, those are the kinds of things that we're moved by.
So it's far better to tie an emotion in with the product versus you know, your hands will be 50% improved.
That's a great point. Statistics are a great way of proving. That's for the more intellectual person. I have both sides. A lot of us do. I want to know when I see all of these studies in the cosmetic studies that says, you know, if, you know, 50% of the people saw improvement. I'm thinking, how large is the study? How many people, where were these women polled? I want to know all of that. I don't believe any of that stuff unless it's sourced, and it's sourced dramatically. So I think the more specific you are, the more that you can get into the very, I have the three Qs, you know, the quantity, quality, and qualifications. So you want to be able to quantify things in terms of percentages. You want to be able to talk about how the quality is superior, and you want to the qualifications, meaning what is your background? How are you the expert? Why should we listen to you and buy your products versus somebody else's? So I think that both of those go hand in hand, so you use both examples. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And then you get people who are both interested in the more intellectual side, and then people who are moved from the inside out.
Susan, I remember watching one of my IBN members on a home shopping network once, and the show opened with a focus on her products, a nice close-up of her products, and the host of the show was saying, you know, we've got these great products here, and they're wonderful, and here's the owner and the manufacturer, and before we get to her products, tell us how you started this company. What's the story behind it? And I was watching the little sales counter in the bottom corner of my screen. She hadn't even started talking about her products, and already people were buying them.
Really? Why do you think that is?
She was telling a good story. I'm just saying what a
oh, great... so she'd already started telling the story. Absolutely.
Yeah, she began to answer the question about how she started, and it all sort of started with her sister being diagnosed with something, and she was looking for some natural products to encourage her sister's healing, and she couldn't find any, so she made some. And, of course, you know, there's women out there listening to this story going, well, you know, I have that same issue. Maybe I'll get some of this stuff. So
exactly.
I just love that you said you were talking about the story, and everyone has at least one.
They do. And I love what Mira Ruckheiser said. She said, the universe is made up not of atoms but of stories. And that's how we all remember our first stories, is on the knee of our grandpapa or our mother, and we're in our cozied up in our little beds and listening to, you know, the Three Bears or Madeline or whatever it is, and we have these really fond memories, and that's how we all respond. It's a very basic and universal.
So, Susan, how do you overcome, I know your book talks a little bit, in fact, there's a chapter with a segment called What's Holding You Back? Do you first sort of have to identify what it is that's keeping you from being able to put yourself out there in the way that you're describing, and then you can move on to sort of tackle it and create these kinds of stories and tell them confidently, as you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think that all of our fears sort of rear their heads instantly, and oftentimes with my clients I work on those fears first, because they're sort of front and center, and they're the elephant in the room. They're demanding to be heard. And if we know what those fears are, we begin to just address them instantly and feel confident. I mean, one of my clients, I remember, she said, you know, she really, really wanted to go on national TV, but she was terrified. And the format is so fast, she would be on shows for 2 to 4 minutes, and we needed to get those sound bites down to 10 to 20 seconds, meaning that she would have 30 seconds to a minute and a half to talk on that show, not necessarily all in one time, meaning she would have maybe four times to speak, you know, in say 10 to 20 seconds. So she had said to me, you know, I really need to get this practice, because that will quell my fear factor, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we practiced those shows over and over and over again until she could feel confident to do them. And then she did a show, and she was invited back, and then she did several more. So it's actually also in the doing of it. I really, really recommend the doing of it, because you can practice as much in your head, but it's actually getting your body physically involved in the task. It's like, you know, if you're a skier and you visualize going down the slope a million times, but you never get to the top and experience it. You actually have to get to the top of the slope, you know, get off the chairlift, get your feet on those moguls, and go
right
down the hill. You have to do it. You might land on your butt a couple of times, which is natural, and, you know, And I remember when I first started, I've only skied a couple times, but I have gone down some pretty intense slopes, and they said, you know, if you're not falling, you're not trying hard enough. And someone said, you know, the more mistakes you make, the closer you are to what you want to do. And so I encourage people to make lots and lots of mistakes. So try first locally and in your small area, so you get your feet wet in your local area. So when you get to national TV, you know, you've got most of those mistakes ironed out.
Well, Susan, I'm sure that's really comforting to a lot of people to know that, you know, it's not going to be perfect the first time you do it. And thank goodness for expertise like yours that's out there. And one of the things your book also says, Susan, is that you should become mediagenic. What is that, and how do we become it?
Well, Mediagenic is friendly to the cameras and to the media. And one of the ways that you can become that is what we were talking about, is practice is really everything, is to become comfortable in the kind of formats that you want to speak in. So if you want to be on radio, listen to the radio, hear those formats, and begin to practice mock interviews, actually, back and forth with a colleague or with your, with a friend or with a professional media trainer. So you get really used to the rhythm and the pacing of that. And then once you get used to that, then you can start moving up and doing TV. Part of being Mediagenic is being your natural, authentic self. And what's hard about that is when you're under pressure and the cameras are on and the timing is down and somebody counts, like on your show, you know, it even made me a little nervous hearing, what's his name, Kevin, going 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. I'm like, ah! You know? And so I could feel myself, you know, taking a breath, like, oh, my God, we're about to be on the air. So you want to get that kind of practice. And I've done dozens and dozens of radio interviews. I still get nervous. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, I certainly have been. I've been doing this since 2005. And whenever the engineer starts counting down, I'm like, oh my gosh, I need some water.
Exactly. And that's a great calmer. So to be Mediagenic, you want to be able to be completely comfortable in your skin, and that takes a lot of practice.
Practice, right?
Yeah.
So Susan, how do you find that, like, what is a turning point that you can notice in a story of someone that you've worked with? Like, someone that came to you and they were just totally flustered, but really their product or their service that they offered was really ready to go, but they weren't. What would you say are the things that you shared with them that caused them to be able to turn things around and really be able to get out there and tell their story so that their business and their products were in the best light possible?
The first thing to remember is, what does my audience need to know and how can I help?
Mm-hmm.
When you angle your information to your audience and think only about what they need, not about yourself,
mm-hmm.
that shifts the whole dynamic. Because if you're thinking about yourself, you're not thinking about what you want to, how you want to help others and convey. And that's going to shift the whole energy and the dynamic. So the first thing is to think about that and to keep on track. So it doesn't matter what you ask me or what any host asks a person or what an interviewer or a journalist asks a person. You have particular information that you want to get out there, and you need to practice that until you can get it out there under any circumstances. So one of my clients, you asked for an example of one of my clients, he's used to giving seminars all over the world, so he's used to talking all day long. And so I had to listen in terms of what he was saying for those stories in between all of the abstracts. He spoke a lot of abstracts and gave a lot of generalizations. And I kept bringing him back to, tell me about some of the experiences of the people in your seminars. Tell me about, you know, how you've helped people. Tell me a little bit about how this has affected your family. What happens in your, you know, in your work life, in your personal life? And bringing it down to the most minute versus the largest story. So if you notice angles in the media, they're actually quite small. They're not large. It's not about how to create your dream.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, how to clear your clutter and lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're very, very small angles. So I would encourage people to think small, not big, and think about each specific story that represents a particular point that you want to convey.
And you mentioned in the story you were just telling about your client that you asked him to incorporate some of his personal life into the story. How do you help people do that without crossing over the line into something that's uncomfortable, and not just uncomfortable, but off limits, recognizing that that's going to be a different line for everyone? How do you help people to share personally without becoming uncomfortable?
Well, part of it is just the practice of it, and then when they say, people usually say, you know, I don't want to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, actually, what happened is he now can speak very succinct sound bites, because in his particular instance, he wanted formulas. So I helped him unpack. I've created a lot of sound bite formulas, and so I showed those to him. Here's the formula. As soon as I did that, For him, that was the answer. And then he could start to plug all of these stories of people who've had successes in his seminars into those formulas. That was particularly for him. I asked him to work on some particular personal stories. So one of his personal stories was about how he lost 70 pounds and how he found that he was eating emotionally because he wasn't getting it out of his relationship. So that was very personal. So we worked on that to just talk about the elements that he felt comfortable with without revealing any very specifics about the relationship. With someone else that I was just media training, she has some things in her personal life that she doesn't want revealed. So we talked about when she would get very, very personal kinds of questions. We worked through some answers that she could easily divert that attention and create another story that was really juicy that answered the question without answering the question. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Is there ever is it ever acceptable to tell the interviewer not to ask a particular question?
Yes, but there has to be a certain amount of trust, because sometimes an interviewer then will ask that question particularly because you haven't. So you really need to understand what the circumstances are.
Mm-hmm.
There are sometimes limits that you can say. You know, I love what Terry Gross does on Fresh Air. She's got an NPR radio show.
Right.
She tells her guests that any kind of question that she asks that they don't want to answer, all they need to do is to let her know that she won't. That they don't want to go there. And sometimes she frames the question with, I don't know if this question is too personal or not.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people have said, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Just right there on the air, like that. But most interviewers don't give you that option, so you need to be able to be prepared to transition gracefully. So really, media training is about being able to transition no matter what somebody asks you, even if they say to you, tell me a little bit about, you know, the juiciest points of your sex life. Well, you know, if we're talking about body bath and delights, you say, well, one of the juiciest things about my sex life is keeping my skin smooth. So my sweetie always wants to touch me. So for that, I like to make a particular scrub sundae with the sugar body scrub, particularly coffee, because, you know, coffee is what zings my husband up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you transition right into that information without saying, you know, he likes the missionary position.
Right. You bring it back, as you say, exactly to what the message that you want to convey is. That's such a great story. I'm, again, pointing out how important stories are, because you're sharing such wonderful information, Susan, and it's great to have it packaged in a way that really tells the story of your client's real-life occurrence, and that really, really helps to hit home and bring the point home. Thank you for sharing that. We've been talking to Susan Harrow, author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul. Susan, we have about 30 seconds left. Can you tell us how best to get in touch with you and find out more about your books and services?
Yeah, go to prsecrets.com. I have a free online e-zine that shares tips and techniques on how to promote yourself with integrity and spirit. And I also have a lot of free downloads, which are teleclasses on soundbiting, on how to get on Oprah, on how to get a six-figure book advance. So those are all free. And
great.
Then I've got the products that I think in particular your audience may be interested in, how to get in O Magazine, because it's product-oriented, and
mm-hmm.
so many people want to get into O's favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
That may be of particular interest. And I show you step-by-step how you need to package yourself and your products to get the Oprah editor's interest for that. And
well, that certainly got my attention. I'm sure it got a lot of other people's attention, too. Susan, thank you for sharing. Visit prsecrets.com to get more information from Susan, and just more Susan in general, because there's a lot of really great tips and, as Susan said, downloads and stuff there. And I've personally spent a couple of hours on the phone doing some media training with Susan, and it really changed my world and my perception of the media in general, and I thank you for that, Susan. I encourage everyone to take a look at what Susan has to offer at prsecrets.com. Thanks also to my guest indie co-host today, Penny Talent of Sugarlicious Scrubs in Holbrook, Massachusetts. I was so glad to have you ladies here today. I hope you'll visit the indiebusinessblog.com, where we're always continuing the conversations. And this Thursday night, April 10th, Join me if you're a member of the Indie Beauty Network for The Riches Are in the Niches, my free group coaching session. This will be our second of four sessions for members, and by the end of this session, you'll be ready to identify the expertise you have that can help you make your products more appealing to your target audience. You can also, as always, download or stream all my radio shows right here at IndieBusinessRadio.com. That's it for today. Have a great week. Enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.